Yeah, I miss like driving literally anywhere and there was like two cars on the road. Like that was right? the best time to just go hike and like didn't have to worry about anything.
Exactly, exactly.
And you could see like so much other random stuff. Whoever knows what happens, you know, when the people are gone.
I was going to say, I remember one of my friends came in town. He flew into LAX and I live in Burbank. So like that is, it's a pretty far distance. Like it's like a good, I don't know, like 15, 20 miles from my house. And usually it takes like an hour and a half to 2 hours to get to LAX because of traffic. But when my friend came in town back in May of last year, it took me 20 minutes to get there. And I was like, what? I'm like, I screenshotted that in Google Maps way because I was like, I will never see this again in my life.
Yeah. Wow.
Man. Yeah, that's LA for you.
We really did get to like that post-apocalyptic world when you can get somewhere within LA within like under half hour.
Mm-hmm. We truly did because that doesn't happen anymore. Not even at like 10 p.m. Open. We're the only one open in our area, and we stayed open until like 12 a.m.
Oh my god!
So yeah, we got slammed a lot. It was over here. It was fun.
When we're open until 9.
Now I moved stores, and I'm at a cafe only store. We close at 8, and then on Fridays we close at 9. And I'm literally like, what am I doing here past 8? Like, I used to feel that way because we used to close at 7, and then we went to closing at 8, and now I'm like, 9 on a Friday, what?
I've got things to do.
I know, I'm like, I gotta go home and sit on my couch.
Yeah. Dude, I cannot, I can't relate to living in LA, like, just living in our little suburb, I don't know, but, like... How did you end up there? Like, what's the story? Like,
oh man. So I grew up in Savannah, Georgia, and when I graduated high school, I went to San Diego State University in San Diego. Once I graduated from San Diego State, I was an acting major. I moved to LA, obviously, to try to start a career. I always knew that LA was like where I wanted to end up. I had been out here a couple of times before the end of high school. I actually, funny enough, I did a film camp at the film school that is literally in my neighborhood. Like I run past the school every single morning whenever That's I go crazy. On runs. It's wild. I'm like, I've come full circle. But it was, like, the most amazing time of my life. It was between my junior and senior year of high school, so in 2014, that summer. And I was out here in Burbank. And so that was just, like, when I came here, I'm like, yep, this is it. This is where I want to be. And it's been a fun ride for the last almost 2 years. I can't believe that I've been here for almost 2 years. It doesn't feel like it. But I guess, you know, COVID took like a year of that. So because I was in my house for a good lot of months. So not really going anywhere, not really doing anything. But yeah, what a fun time to get to LA.
Sorry, my Zoom fucking broke throughout.
I was like, did you just freeze? Or
yeah.
And now it's a real episode because that literally Love happens it. Every time.
Wait, so are you two in Boulder then? Or where in Colorado?
So I'm hanging out in Longmont.
Yeah, I'm in Louisville, but I work in Longmont. So basically, I lived in Boulder for, oh God, how long? This is my second year out of Boulder. So I was, what, I don't know. I was in Boulder for like 5-6 years.
Yeah, this is like four college.
Yeah. And nice. Then, yeah, now instead of live in Boulder, I live on the south side of Boulder and drive through Boulder to go, or drive past Boulder to go to work, pretty much. But Boulder's cool. It's an interesting, funky little spot.
Mm-hmm. So. I've never been. I've only ever been to Denver, but I've always wanted to go to Boulder.
Boulder's worth a visit.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But, I mean, I think if you're... I guess it depends on what you're going for. Like, if you're going for any kind of, like, you know, music scene or, like, theater scene or any type of that kind of thing, Denver's definitely, like, miles ahead.
Of course, yeah.
But then if you're going to do, like, hiking and outdoorsy stuff, Boulder's definitely the spot to hit.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. I think, so I have a friend who was from there. I think she was from Boulder originally. Or, like, she was from somewhere else, but she moved there. Mm-hmm. And then she moved here for a couple months. And now she is performing on cruise ships. So that's super cool.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's cool.
But she was telling me all about Colorado. I'm like, oh, I've only been to Denver and, like, barely seen a little bit of Denver. Like, I barely went outside of the city. So now I'm like, I have to go. I really want to do a drive through of, like, Colorado and do a road trip and go to all of the national parks.
There you go. Hit all the mountain towns and everything.
Oh, that'd be so nice.
Just gotta stop by Leadville. That's the one and Nederland.
Ooh, Ned.
I love Ned.
What about Telluride? I've heard of that.
Telluride is beautiful, but it is like a hike outside of Denver. Really? Yeah. Like, it's totally worth it. You should absolutely go to Telluride. Telluride is beautiful. I've only been there a few times. Like, it's way out of the way.
Super I keep cool. seeing videos of it and, like, pictures, and, like, it's so pretty.
Yeah.
It reminds me of, like, towns that I've seen, like, outside of the U.S., like, European mountain towns.
Yeah.
Sorry, Patrick, what were you going to say?
No, you're good, yeah. And I think if someone's going to shoot a movie in Colorado, like, 9 times out of 10, if it's got, like, mountain scenes, it's in Telluride. Like, The Hateful Eight was shot entirely in Telluride, I'm pretty sure.
What? I didn't know that.
Because we got notifications about that a whole bunch because, the news outlets here were all super excited about it, so.
Of course. Of course.
Well,
that's awesome.
Speaking of movies and acting, so I know that you are in both, Moxie and Yes Day, and then you're also in a short film. Man, why am I blanking on the name of it? What was it called again?
The Wasted Years.
And that one's on Amazon Prime, and then the other two are feature lengths on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So, what was it like, you know, working on those three projects? I know it was kind of probably a little bit of a different experience on, you know, The Wasted Years versus maybe Moxie and Yes Day. How did you, A, get into that situation to get into those opportunities, and, you know, what was it like doing that?
Yeah, so The Wasted Years was my first big thing that I ever did in San Diego. Most of the stuff that I had ever done was just through college and, like, some student short films, but I got this casting call through Facebook, and it was funny because, like, I had a really rough, this was in the summer of 2018, I had a really rough summer, and I was basically just working, like, 7 days a week, no joke, and it was awful. Yeah, it was rough. Would never put myself through that again. But I had pretty much given up on doing anything film related. I was just kind of like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I got this casting call for The Wasted Years. And so I submitted to it and I didn't hear back for like 2 weeks. And I was just like, okay, whatever, I'll just move on. And then at like 4 a.m., the director texted me through Facebook and was like, hey, I'm out of the country right now. That's why I'm contacting you through Facebook. But our lead dropped out, and you are my second pick. I would like you to play the lead in The Wasted Years. And I was like, lit. Let's do it.
That's cool.
It was awesome. And so that whole experience was wild. We were planning to just shoot it over the course of like 2 months, and it turned into a 6-month-long project. Most of us now live in LA, so that's really cool. And then the rest of us still live in San Diego, live in San Diego, mm-hmm. which is not too far, and they come up here sometimes. But like the core group of that casting crew live in LA now, so it's like we're our little family. And it was so much fun. I got to play a role that I like had never really done before. She was the main girl, her name's Catherine, which ironically is my name. except where I go by Katie, not Kat. But basically, like, the story follows her wanting to create this movie of her life, and in particular her freshman year of college, in one night where they go to this frat party where pretty much, like, all of everybody's inner demons, like, come to light, and they just are trying to figure out life and they don't know what's going on. And it's like a big coming of age story. It's pretty good. It was really fun. And we ended up getting into the Golden State Film Festival up in Hollywood my junior year, or I'm sorry, it was my senior year of college. Yeah, that was incredible. They had a red carpet at the Chinese Theater. We got to walk the red carpet. We were dressed up super fancy. We got to sit in the Chinese Theater and watch the little set, like the section that we were placed in, like, all on the big screen. And I was just like, wow, this is what I'm going to get to do for the rest of my life. That is incredible. So, cool. Yeah, that was the wasted years. But when I moved to LA, I had never done background work before, and my friend had. So my friend was like, you should sign up to start doing background work through this background, like, agency. And I was like, okay, like, that's cool. Like, I can get on set and meet people and, like, get to know how Hollywood works on a set. And I got really lucky and booked a 2-night shoot for Moxie. I was in the football scene, and it was freezing cold that night. It was raining. We were miserable, but it was incredible because Amy Poehler was, like, 20 feet from us, and she was so much fun to work with. I was sitting there at, like, 3 a.m. looking at her like, oh, my God, if somebody would have told me a year ago that I'd be working with Amy Poehler, I would have been, like, losing my mind. But she was really cool. There was, like, the big scene that I was in. There was, like, over 500 people there. And then there was another scene where they pulled, like, 20 of us to go and just, like, film this little scene outside of, like, the snack cart at the football game. And I got picked, and that's when I got to really, like, work one-on-one with Amy Poehler. And I just was like, this is wild. This is so wild. Similarly, yeah, it was wild. I was going to say, similarly, that's how I felt when I was on Yes Day, because that was a week-long shoot here in Burbank, and I played a concert goer, and I was in a scene with Jennifer Garner, and I was, like, one out of 40 that were picked out of 1,000 people to go and, like, be in this more intimate scene with Jennifer Garner. And it was literally just us hanging out with her for a week. And I was like, What is real life right now? There's a picture of me and my friends on her phone. She was going to post it on her Instagram. And she was like, yeah, you guys should get together. I'm going to post this on, like, the behind the scenes for Yes Day. You should look out for it on my Instagram. And I was like, Jennifer Garner has a picture of me on her phone. That's wild. Like,
oh, wow.
But yeah, definitely two very different settings. A Hollywood set is a lot more, I wouldn't say it's less chaotic than a student film, because it can be pretty chaotic, but I guess it's more, like, organized is what I should say. But it's really long shoots. I don't think that I've ever had a shoot where I've gone over or under like 12 hours. There's some pretty long nights, pretty long days. Yeah. But they're fun. They're so much fun. And like I said, I'm going to be doing another shoot with, I'm going to be doing background. I don't know quite yet what I'm going to be doing for American Horror Stories, but I know that it's the spinoff of the original American Horror Story. And I believe I read that there's, like, 16 episodes that they're going to be standalone episodes, and they're, like, doing them based upon, like, true horror stories or, like, true crime stories from American, like, folklore and stuff like that. So I was like, that's so cool.
Okay. That's so cool. Yeah. And so then that's kind of, like, the next thing that you're working on.
Yes, that is the next thing that I am working on. Sorry, I took that one step too far, but...
Oh, no, you're good. You're good. And then, how did you, you know, get into acting in the first place? And I guess now, like you said, like, you got to, you know, sit there and work one-on-one with, like, Amy Poehler, and you've kind of hung out with Jennifer Garner. Like, how does it feel to go from, like, I guess, no, I'm getting ahead of myself. So how did you get into acting in the first place?
So when I was growing up in Savannah, I believe I was 9 years old. I started doing plays at school, and then I got into the Savannah Children's Theater, and I started doing children's theater at the age of, like, I want to say, like, 11. And so I did that all throughout high school, and then I went to Savannah Arts Academy, which was a performing arts high school in Savannah, Georgia. And I was a theater major there, too. And I want to say between me being 11 and me turning 18 and going off to college, I did, like, over 50 productions, probably, maybe more, definitely not less. And it was just, like, one production after another, and I just absolutely loved it. I didn't really get into film until my junior year. That summer was when I went to Burbank and stayed out here for a film program. And then when I finished that acting for film program, when I went back to Savannah, I actually got into a SCAD short film, the Savannah College of Art and Design. And I was there. I did that for a weekend. Just was like playing like a party goer, but it was still really cool. And that was when I first really got introduced to film besides my film camp. And I realized that that's definitely something that I would want to have a career in. So then I went to college. And when I went to college, I was technically a theater major with a performance emphasis, but they had a film production program. And so we got to also be used in the film production program that they, you know, when they needed actors. So
that's cool.
From there, I went on to one project, to another, and then started writing my own stuff. And then I moved to LA, and I just kind of, pre-pandemic, I was doing really well with the background work. I signed up for that agency. I actually, at one time, was submitting through 3 different background agencies, 1 for commercials and then 2 for like television and film. And it was super fun, and I was having a great time. I was working toward getting my SAG card to be in the union, or at least like become eligible, because I wouldn't really want to join it prior to having like a bunch of stuff that I could actually put on my resume. Because when you do background, you can't necessarily like put it on your resume. It's just like a way to meet people and get exposure to sets. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's what I was working on, and then COVID happened. But that is how I got started. The slope, but yeah. It was good.
How does it feel to go from like, you know, starting off in children's theaters to getting to work one-on-one with Amy Poehler? Like,
unreal. Honestly, like I said earlier, if at any point in my past you would have told me, hey, one day you're gonna work one-on-one with Amy Poehler, I would have been like, yeah, sure, in my dreams. I'm like, oh yeah, one day, you know? But it actually happened, and it makes me feel like, you know, when you're a kid, like growing up, and you're like, oh, I'm going to like win an Emmy, or I'm gonna win a Tony, or I'm gonna win an Oscar, and like you're serious about it, but you know, like, it's kind of like it's a dream, you know? And so that's what working with Amy Poehler felt like. It felt like a dream. And then afterwards I was like, wait, no, that actually happened. And it's just kind of weird, because like I'll mention it to people and people are like, you've worked with Amy Poehler, or you've worked with Jennifer Garner. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, wow, that must be an LA thing. And I'm like, to me, they were just like another person after I got to meet them, of course, you know, after I had the little inner monologue freak out of, oh my God, that's Jennifer Garner, that's Amy Poehler. Like, but yeah, it felt totally unreal and like I was living in a dream. And then after the realization like washed over me, I was just like, huh, that's cool. Like, I get to do this for the rest of my life. Like, I get to actually be friends with all of these Hollywood A-listers that I grew up watching. So, yeah. Woo.
That's the coolest. It's nice to, like, I don't know, have those moments where it's kind of like, oh, yeah, this is, like, feasible. Like, this is something that, you know, is doable. It's not, like, an unreasonable or, like, unrealistic dream. which I feel like is, at least from my experience, is kind of like the one of the main things that kind of repels people from, you know, following artistic pursuits, whether it be, you know, no matter what it is, because it's just like, oh, well, what are you going to do for money is always like the follow-up question to, oh, I like this and I want to do this. And I don't know, it's kind of disheartening to have that. But then you have, you know, stories like that where it's just like, oh shit. Mm-hmm. This is like real life.
It can happen.
Most definitely. It can. Mm-hmm. I've always thought, like, yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, I've always thought, these people get to do it, why can't I do it? Like, you hear about this new upcoming actor, actress, or musician, or artist, and they've made it. Why can't I, you know? Hey. So that's the mentality that you have to have, and money will come. It'll you'll make it. You'll find a way if that's truly like what you want to do, you know. So
yeah,
work at the one end of the odd day, job.
No, you're good. At the end of the day, we're all just people making stuff. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, we are.
Speaking of making things, I want to hear about the things you've written. You've written are screenplays? Is that the?
I haven't finished anything, but I've started quite a few different screenplays. I like to write more like nostalgic, different like short stories. So I wrote, I guess it could technically be turned into a screenplay, but it was more of like a short story format about just like being a child and growing up and like all of the happy, like euphoric feelings that we had when we were a kid, like what it felt like to run down the street at night when you were supposed to be home before like the street lamps turned on, or like what it felt like to I don't know, like get on your bike and not have like a care in the world and just go hang out with your friends and be out all day and just be super happy. And I tried to think more of like along those lines of like, what would life, like would we still be super super happy if we didn't even have like, I don't know what I was going to say, like technology. Like I think about like now that we've grown up, you know, like what would it be like? Would we still be kind of feeling those different childlike feelings of like wonder if we weren't like so glued to our phones, or like, I don't know how to explain it, but that's what I was trying to write. I'm actually working on a book to try to be published through Amazon by the end of the year with a couple of different poems that I've written.
Dude.
Yes.
Yeah. I like to write poetry, like very free-form poetry, not like rhyming, or sometimes they rhyme, but more just like, I don't know, like some of my favorite poets are like R.M. Drake. I don't know if you've ever heard of R.M. Drake. I follow him on Instagram, and I have one of his books right over here. He writes, I just knocked over everything. So this is called The Book I Wrote That Saved My Life. And he writes just like, you know, like free form poetry like this, like nothing rhymes or anything like that. There's no necessarily like set structure to it, but it's like little inspirational quotes or inspirational moments in life, or like heartbreaking moments in life. And so I've been trying to pull like a collection. I've been actually writing poetry since I was eight. No, I'm sorry, not eight, in eighth grade. And I've been an 8-year-old poet. But no, since I was in eighth grade, I got really into it, and I filled up like a few notebooks. So I think that I have them all here. They might actually be at my house in Georgia, but I've been trying to pull a bunch of those and just see like over the course of all the years that I've written, what I can put together in this book and like kind of group them into like different phases. I don't know what they're gonna be like yet, but like this book is different like sections, which are like different phases of his life. And so I was like, that's pretty cool. I really like that idea.
I like that. Have you ever heard of Courtney Peppernell?
I think I have one.
She does the Pillow Thoughts books.
I was like, I just saw her Pillow Thoughts book right here.
I adore those books. I have fantastic. All of them, and I have cried through each one of them.
I love that. I got really into reading those books when I was in England, actually. I went and studied abroad in college, and a couple of my friends really loved those types of books, and they had some with them when I was on a like a little backpacking trip with them. So I think the first one that I read was, I think it was Milk and Honey. So I read that one.
The Ruby Cower?
Yes, yes. Ugh. So good. And then I can't remember the other one that she had, but it was like, it really got me into that.
Yeah, Homebody, and but I think that's like the one that she like just released, and then
Milk
and Honey, and then there's like The Sun and All Her Flowers or something like that.
I think that was it. Actually, it's right here. Yeah. Yes, yeah, so I have Milk and Honey and The Sun and All Her Flowers. Oh. So, really good. I have a few more there too, but they're so good. But this one's really good too. It's like a collection of almost everything that he's written, and he just, the way that he writes is so like powerful, and it's so simple too. So that's what I've been striving for. Something that really resonates with everybody, but is also not super complicated to understand, you know?
Yes. Reachable. I love that.
Reachable. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's what I would love to see, like we've talked about in previous episodes, we had Cameron talk about how it would be cool to see, just look at sketchbooks, because it's the, you know, those ideas that just don't make it out there. And I love that idea of just like, the artist like started something, and like, cause you can, I feel like you can find like all of these inspirations for other works that you do. So like, I feel like, especially with me looking back on like half written songs, like 30-second demo things, I'm like, okay, this idea, I forgot about it, and then it turned into this song, or you could see this influence in this song. I like that idea. Have you kind of noticed that with like your little poems that you've kind of dug up?
Most definitely. I've gone from like writing like a short little like sentence about something to then being like, oh, this makes me think of something else. And then I'll write like a full page in my like iPhone notes or something like that. Mm-hmm. I definitely see it like jump from one idea to another to another. I might like write like a word of something that I'm feeling and then just think like, oh, what's a short story that I could write based upon this word? Or things like that. What's a short scene I could write based upon something that I just saw, you know?
Mm-hmm. So. Oh, that's cool. I'm also glad that I'm not the only one who, like, you know, I accidentally show up, like, a little bit early to work, and then I'm sitting in the parking lot, and then, like, I see something, and I'm like, maybe I'm just super tired, but that looks poetic as anything. And then I'll, like, make a random note, and it's, like, it's kind of weird, but kind of cool, like after I've had a little bit of caffeine and not like, you know, zombie dead.
I do that all the time. People watching is definitely something that I use within acting and within writing. So that's, I feel cool. You on that one.
Yeah. So another huge point of this podcast is we kind of like to dive into like the creative process of, so we kind of did that a little bit with like the poetry and the short stories that we were talking about. But one thing that's always been fascinating to me is I've worked with like dancers, and I've worked with like, you know, graphic design a whole lot in photography. And so I've kind of gotten to see a little bit into that world, but I haven't really worked a lot with actors and actresses. So when you're like approaching a role, what all does that entail? Because that's something that's kind of fascinating to me. And like, what do you, I guess, like, how do you approach it, and like, what do you bring to the table? Like, how do you go about it all?
I love that question. It's a very loaded question. Basically, when I get a script, I look for the human like characteristics in this character, and then I think about things that have maybe happened to me in my life that have like made me feel like a certain emotion. Maybe I haven't been through exactly what this character is going through, but like, let's say like she's scared because she's walking in the woods alone at night. Well, I've never been scared because I've never really walked in the woods alone at night and felt threatened, but I have been scared in other situations. So I think about that and I try to match emotions. I try to really get into the head of a character. I try to think about, oh, this is their relationship with this character, and this is their relationship with this character. And if, like, a backstory isn't necessarily there for them, like, if it's not explicit in the script, I like to think of things like, oh, well, this character is having a bad day, but it only talks about, like, her night. Well, what happened during the day? You know, and so I come up with, like, this backstory to see, like, maybe I can figure out more and put more into this character of this is how she went about her day, and then all of this fucked up shit happened at night, and now she's, like, going through it. But yeah, I definitely look at that, and then I try really hard not to watch other performances from other actors, particularly if I'm doing, this is more so like for a play, if I'm doing a play, I try not to watch other performances because I want to be able to bring my own originality to a character. For films, they don't really repeat films very often, but I do sometimes watch, like, oh, if this character reminds me of this character, I'm going to watch this and take a little bit of, like, their performance and see, like, if I could fit that into this character, or so be it. But yeah, it's a very long process. I try to get inspiration from wherever I can, be that I'm walking down the street and I see something happen, or I hear somebody say something, or a fun game I like to play is, like, looking at somebody on the side of the street and being like, what's their life like? What do I think, like, they've done prior to this? Or who do I think that they are? And then I can create, it helps with the, like, the improv skills, to being able to create a character on the spot. So yeah, and then, like I said, I look for myself in that character, things I can relate to, and just kind of go from there. It also helps when the director knows exactly, like, what they want, and they can help coach you into that. But that's what I do for the pre-process of figuring out that character. Okay. So yeah, it's a task.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah.
Because I've always been interested if it's, like, so, and also, like, so you've done theater. Have you done, like, musical theater and stuff as well? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So how would you say that, like, your experience and, like, your, I guess, feeling of expression changes from, like, stage performance to, like, film performance? Is there, like, anything, like, major noticeable or...
100%. Your physicality on stage, especially in musical theater, has to be so grand, so over the top. All of your facial expressions have to, I remember they used to say, your facial expressions have to reach the back row. Like, if you were perform, well, our the Children's Theater I performed in was a very intimate setting, but my high school, for example, had a really big stage and auditorium. So if I was performing on that stage, I had to be super loud, and I had to have incredible facial expressions. They always said, like, if you're giving all your energy, give some more. But with film, it's quite the opposite. You have to be super toned for a film, or toned down, I mean, and you just, it's like, I don't know, like I said, it's like a complete 180. With film, you have to speak quietly, especially if you're using a microphone, or you have to, your facial expressions have to be very simple, very not over the top. It can be very frustrating being a, like, a theater actress. Like, I remember my first acting for film class, a lot of us had a theater background, and so they would always be like, watch your facial expressions, you're being too theatrical. Because it would be super fake on film if you have, like, this huge, like, grin on your face and you're like, oh my gosh, hi, how are you, you know? Mm-hmm. Unless that's the type of film that you're doing, but most of the time it's not. Most of the time you have to be very grounded, very relaxed, and, like, just a normal person, you know? Yeah.
No, that's really interesting, because you don't, like, you think, like, acting, right? Period. I don't think most people think about, like, the differences between the big theatrical gestures you have to do on stage versus like on film, where it really is about like muted details and like soft voices and just like changes of expression. Like even is yeah, like they don't, I mean, I make a lot of expressions, you guys are watching me, but like sometimes that doesn't fly and that's crazy. Well, it's just interesting, I guess.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I'm very big on the facial expressions too. So when I am in a film, even up until now, like I still get caught up in like, oh, I'm being too theatrical, or oh, I'm being too loud, or I need to tone it down, you know? But yeah, definitely.
That's so interesting, because I'm just thinking about like how I do everything for literally the theatrics. And like when you're on film, gotta keep a little low key.
Because the camera like magnifies everything by like 100%. Not literally, but you know, like it, if you make like one small facial expression, it's going to be like a huge thing. So that's why you have to, smaller is better. I should say not smaller, but grounded is better instead of super grounded's out there. Grounded's a
good word for it.
Yeah. I think that's like the best wording for that kind of thing is grounded. I like that.
Yeah. You have to be very much a real person on film instead of being this over the top like Disney character for musical theater.
That's also kind of funny, because what was it? I have acted for like a music video that we shot where it was just very grand and things, and I am not good in front of a camera. It's just very uncomfortable to watch. So cool.
Yeah, I know. I can't stand watching myself on like short films either, because I don't know why, but I always look at my eyes and I'm like, where am I looking? Like that's my one big thing, is like it's not my acting, it's always my eye line. I'm like, what am I doing? Why didn't nobody fix this?
That's interesting too, because like when I'm playing like a show, I just never know where to look, to be totally honest, half the time. And so sometimes it's extra comfortable when I can't see anything, when the lights are bright enough, but then it's also just like, is there anyone out there? No. So that's interesting. It's once you get into those little like the spotlight of the situations, it's like you never really think about those tiny little things. And it's, you know, again, I'll reiterate, I'm so glad that I perform with a guitar in my hands. Otherwise, it would be the most uncomfortable show you'd ever go to.
Hands. In film or theater, whenever I have a scene, because I always talk with my hands, I'm doing it now. Like, it is, I'm always like, what do I do with my hands? What should I do with my hands? Where are my hands? Like, I remember my theater professors would always be like, hands at your side, Katie, just stop with the hands. And I'm like, well, I don't know what to do. Like,
just stop with the hands.
I'm very expressive. Stop the hands, Katie. So I relate, Patrick. Yes. I relate with the whole, like, when I have something in my hands, it's way better because I don't fidget.
Yes. Yeah. No. We played around with that idea. We played around with a lot of dumb ideas. There was one time where I was playing drums, that was not good, that did not make it live, which is very good. But I mean, it's fun to do that. And it's really cool. So you said you were part of like some student films. Did you were you part of any student, or did anyone in your school kind of go off on their own and make like feature lengths or short films that were not projects while you were there?
Good question. I'm sure they did, but I know that a lot of the films, I have a really good friend, well, four friends. I have really good four friends. They were all film production majors at San Diego State, and they, I'm still close with them. They have won a lot of awards for the films that they've made. I don't think they've ever made a feature film, but they've definitely made short films and other small little projects that have gone on to win even like regional awards and like San Diego award, like city awards for the city of San Diego, and school awards too. So I want to say that they've made them for class, but they've also submitted them to festivals and won like awards and like gone to certain festivals, especially around like San Diego. But I was never in any of them that like were separate from school through my school friends.
Okay.
The Wasted Years was completely separate. Like, it wasn't even affiliated with school. I was the only one that went to San Diego State. The director like was home from UC Davis and was just like, I want to write a film. And
oh, that's cool.
So it came.
I yeah, like that. Great. I like that. Cause that's my exposure to film is I have a couple friends out in Greeley, Colorado, who they started making like some feature length films, and they were like English majors or graphic design majors and stuff. And so that is my experience. They did the very first movie that they made, which I don't think you can find there. You can find like the short version of it, because it was like a short film that they made for like a class.
Mm-hmm.
So that short film version is on YouTube, and they used basically all the Maddie's Change music we had out at the time was like the soundtrack, and then they made it into a feature length film. But I think that they were like, eek, it's our first one, and this is wrong with it, that's wrong with it. But it was cool. It was like a feature length film with a random Maddie's Changed music video in the middle, kind of. And that's my it was kind of funny, but it's cool to watch people do that, because they did their next film, actually they submitted it and it won what's it called, the Denver Underground Film Festival, like best feature length. That's which awesome. Was cool. And I'm not sure, you're probably more keen to how big that festival is, if you've ever heard of it at all. I'm not sure if there's a lot of filmmaking that goes on in Colorado, but it's interesting.
I have heard of it.
Oh really? Oh, that's yeah. Cool. Nice.
A couple of my filmmaking friends who went to SDSU were from Colorado, so wow. They've submitted their work to the film festival there, that one in particular.
Hell yeah. We always got ties to Colorado somehow.
I know.
I mean, like, we live here, but...
So, yeah.
That's cool. So, would you say that there's almost, like, a kind of, I guess, acting or, like, film scene in, like, all of these kind of cities? Because that's something that I'm interested in, because I feel like, to an extent, there always is some type of, like, quote-unquote scene, no matter where you're at, like... Denver's got a music scene, but then you also have like kind of like this graphic design scenes type of thing, and you have like a photography scene kind of thing. And I feel like I'm interested to know if there's like that kind of, you know, community or situation across all of these, you know, artistic pursuits and everything. Would you say that there's something you would call like a scene from maybe even back in Savannah and now in like LA and San Diego?
Oh, for sure. Especially there's a huge film scene in Atlanta and Savannah now.
Mm-hmm.
Like it really took flight after I left. I mean, Atlanta was starting to become a little popular with filmmaking when mm-hmm. I was still in school, like in high school. But once I left and like went out to San Diego, it was like, boom, everything was being made in Atlanta. But I definitely think that like major cities especially have such a collection of people in general that there's bound to be different art scenes. There's bound to be like different music scenes, or like you said, different mm-hmm. like graphic designs, different visual art scenes. I feel like though certain cities are more of hubs for like certain things, like how obviously like New York and Chicago are a theater town. Chicago mm-hmm. is particularly good with comedy, and San Diego is actually a huge theater town, but not so much of a film town. There is still a film mm-hmm. scene there, and obviously there's like entertainment scenes there because Comic-Con is held there, and there's a lot to do in that type of entertainment scene, but they're more focused on, they have a lot of regional theaters in San Diego that actually test out Broadway shows before they go to New York.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But on the flip side, Los Angeles is a huge television and movie scene, but not really a theater scene. We have like small again, like regional theaters. There's a few really big theaters that like touring Broadway shows will come to, but if you're looking to be a theater actor, you'd probably do better in San Francisco or San Diego as opposed to LA. And if you're looking to be a film actor and really have like an amazing career, you probably wouldn't want to be in anywhere besides like Atlanta, New York, or LA. So yeah, I definitely think that there's like scenes, like I said, across especially major cities in the US, but I feel like certain cities have like other vibes, you know, more so than the other.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also interested now that we're getting into kind of like the scene idea is how much like DIY, you know, plays a part in acting and filmmaking, because like it is huge for music. And it's kind of interesting because like when you're trying to do like a DIY tour, it's like, oh, you have to go through like all these different channels, be like, oh, you have to get in contact with this person in Kansas. And it's kind of just like uncovering like this huge like, you know, ecosystem and like community underneath a rock that you might not have had, that, you know, pretty much no one outside of that area has heard of. And it's so cool to just kind of drop into those kind of communities and, you know, meet different people of who are super like-minded, but then they create this art that's kind of got this different style to your own. So do you guys, I guess, how often do you run into kind of like that DIY aspect when it comes to film and acting?
Literally every single time. Like, every single... Yes. Yeah, everything that you said was like, yep, 100%. Like, The Wasted Years was completely DIY. Like, my friend, like I said, was all... She's like, I've had this idea for a long time, and I just want to write a film, and I want to film it. And she just literally put a casting call up on Facebook, and people responded. She got a crew together. We, like, had to talk to a few places around San Diego to see if we could film there. And we just made a movie. We were like, who has a camera? You have a camera? Okay, who can do this? Who can do sound? Like, and we just made a movie. That's literally how it goes every single time. I mean, I meet people on these sets for, like, actual network stuff, and they're like, hey, you're an actor. I'm going to remember you because I'm a writer, and I'm on this set so that I can meet other people so that we can, like, form a group and then make our own stuff. It literally everywhere. A lot of my professors would always say, like, if you're not getting auditions, make your own opportunities. And, hey. Yeah, 100%. I agree 100%. So...
Yeah, I think that's an important lesson to some, like, if you're not getting the shit, sometimes you gotta go fishing.
Like, exactly.
Literally.
Exactly.
Yeah, and just, you know, kind of send it out there. You never know what's gonna stick. Like, we ended up as, like, a real, quote-unquote, real band because it's like, fuck it, I guess I'll just send an email to a couple of venues, and one of them responded, was like, yeah, we got an opening here, and then... We developed a relationship and sold tickets, and then
that's so cool.
Like, shit, you never know what's gonna happen. And yeah, I think it's also just like, it's so cool to, you know, experience everything on that DIY level. And I hope that I can always be a part of, you know, some kind of DIY community, to some extent, because it's just so incredible to, you know, you never know if you're gonna, you know, work on a film with like someone who in 10 years is like, oh yeah, I worked with Amy Poehler on this like underground film thing where we like recorded it on like an iPhone and we made a movie and submitted it somewhere. Like, you never know. Like, and that's cool because, you know, all it takes is just the right combination of things, and ultimately we're all just kind of like rubbing shoulders with each other trying to create something cool. And every now and then something like, it's always magic no matter what, because it's, you know, you come together and you create something new, which is incredible. But then every now and then you create something that just strikes a chord with the public, essentially.
Yep. Yeah. That's exactly right. It reminds me of
fucking
that.
Cool.
I know. I was gonna say that reminds me of, wasn't there that documentary about the guy who free climbed El Capitan in Yosemite? It was literally like this documentary was shot on an iPhone and won an Oscar.
I need to watch that because
I've never seen it, but
I'm a really big, it's called Free Solo, and I'm a really big climber, and I need to watch it ASAP. Because I've actually just gone down a rabbit hole. The guy who climbed its name's Alex Honnitz, and I've watched like all of his YouTube videos now. I've watched more footage of him on YouTube than like the film itself is in length. Oh my God. But yeah, I mean, it's just, if you do something, and like at the same time, so like to be a professional climber at that aspect too, it's like, how do you fund yourself? And well, you know, that just accomplishing that, like fucking, like seeming like unreasonable feat is absurd. And that just struck a chord, and everyone's like, that was incredible. Like, dude just climbed, 2,000-3,000 feet, no ropes or anything, just
I could not.
Ugh. So cool, though.
I wouldn't be like,
conceptually awesome, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I'll watch from either the top or the bottom, but...
Yes. Climb part of it, but not the whole thing. No.
I know.
Not without ropes. Yeah. Ooh.
No, definitely. But, no.
Oh, man. Yeah, because I think that's also, like, with my friend who made... he's making films out here. So their first movie, it was super cool to watch, too, from, like, that DIY perspective, because... So it was, like, originally just the short film, right? But then they made it into a feature-length film, and it's, like, the first, like... 15-20 minutes was just the short film, and then it was just so cool to watch, you know, these people that I know make this thing that you could see the writing improved, the, you know, the film technique and everything, the editing improved, and it just, you know, like exponentially got like better on like the production side of things, and that was just the coolest thing to, you know, see it like progressively get better as the movie went on. It's like, wow, you guys like really figured out what worked and everything. And that's like, I love watching like that kind of growth and stuff. And so I think, which is, you know, I think that goes for anything, whether you're, you know, into sports or arts or anything and going through a tough time. Cause I think that was one of the best things that my friend had me do when I went through like a rough breakup session. I was like, yeah, just have a journal entry thing. And then every day, and then you can look back and see where you came from. Like shit, like 12-year-old me looking at like what I've done today would probably be like, kind of a rock star, you did some cool stuff. Aww. Even like, which I think is good to like, you know, take a second and step back, like saying like, oh, say like, what would 12-year-old you think of you today, like, and just really analyze what you've done.
Yeah,
because like, what do you think 12-year-old you would think of, you know, you right now?
She'd probably like pee her pants out of excitement, like. I mean, when I was 12, I wanted to either go to New York and try for Broadway, or I wanted to go to LA and try for Hollywood. And I was always more attracted toward Hollywood, but everybody in Savannah wanted to go to New York. So I was just like, oh, maybe New York is like where I'm at, you know, but I ended up where I was supposed to be. San Diego was like never in my mind. And it was just interesting that I ended up there.
Mm-hmm.
That in itself was another great adventure. Shoot, even like college me thinking about like the fact that I now live down the street from where like my biggest inspirational kick to go into the film industry came from, I'm literally like, shit, like, yeah. That's so wild. Like, literally right across the street from me, like if I was to look like through my wall right here is Warner Brothers Studios. And like you go, yeah, and you go down the street and then there's like the New York Film Academy, which is where I went to school. And I just remember when I was there, I thought it was the coolest thing that I was like near all of these film studios. Oh, and Universal Studios is right across the street from them. So literally now I'm like, I literally live down the street from where I want to work. Talk about inspiration, talk about coming full circle, like working with Amy Poehler, even like at the Starbucks that I work at is in this neighborhood too. And like, it's literally like a 5-minute walk from here. And so we get people from Warner Brothers all the time, and like all these celebrities come in, and I'm just like, this is so weird. Like, I would never in my life, even 18-year-old me would not have ever guessed that I would have had the experiences that I have had. Shit, I don't even think that, like, 20-year-old me would have... I'm 24 now, so I'm like, I don't think that 20-year-old me knew what 24-year-old Katie was going to go through in between that time period, you know? It's definitely a big, like, wow moment. I read my journals, too, like, from middle school, and I'm just like, oh, Katie, you were so dumb. Like, like, I mean, not dumb in that moment, but, like, now it's like, oh, you were so dramatic. Like, everything was going to work out. Everything was going to be great, and everything has worked out, you know?
If only you knew, girl.
I know. Literally, I'm like, if only you knew. If only I could go back in time and, like, whisper in your ear. But 12-year-old me would probably be like, okay.
Yeah, I feel like you gotta have that, like, period of time where you're just, like, flailing around and being like, it's not gonna be okay. And then, and before you finally realize, like, you know, I'm trying, and, you know, whether it works or not, it's exciting trying to get there. So.
Yep.
Hey.
It builds character.
Yes. Yes, it's just team building alone.
True. Very true. Very important. So, yeah.
Well, this is a little offhand, but, like, we don't know you that well, Katie, but I want to say I'm really proud of you.
Oh, like, God, thank you.
Like, you've fucking been doing, like, acting, like, since you were little. Like, this is what you've always loved, and you're, like, still fucking doing it, and you're, like, achieving your little dreams, and you're, like, doing the thing, and I'm just really happy for you. That's
Queen,
it.
Queen, thank you. Thank you so much. I'm really proud of y'all. Like, this is so fucking cool. I adore, like, everybody who has started podcasts, and especially artists who are working toward their own goals and coming together with other people and just, like, talking about the whole creative process. I freaking love that. And I think that is so cool. So thank you guys for literally, like, just being like, oh, she's a friend of Patrick's brother. Like, okay, yeah. Let's just have her. Like, but yes. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh. Oh, thank you so much for being on, and it's also cool because, like, I feel like it's easy to an extent to kind of get stuck within, like, your own little, like, circle of, like, oh, I'm, you know, like, I know, because, like, when we were talking about this podcast, we were like, okay, who could we have on, and one of our huge fears was that, you know, we wouldn't have enough, like, people to interview, but, like, so far, everyone's been, like, super interested to, you know, talk, and it's like, ugh. I didn't see that coming. And also, I'm like, well, I know, like, 90% musicians, so we definitely need to change it up a little bit from that. So it's been super cool to, you know, we have, like, an array. It's not just musicians. It's not just, like, illustrators and graphic designers. So it's, like, cool to, you know, connect across these creative lines. Mm-hmm. And so, and it's also, you know, it's refreshing, and it's really nice to just, you know, see that we're all, to an extent, going through a lot of the similar stuff, and we face some of the same roadblocks, face some of the same, you know, success stories. They're all, like, we're all kind of just part of this weird, wacky one story, which is kind of cool. And it's just, and it's also, for some reason, I just have never, you know, gotten to do a lot of work with, like, an actor kind of like that, too. So it's super cool to, you know, see that side of the coin as well. Because I feel like acting is also kind of a little bit, you know, I mean, everything is, like, all of these little, like, avenues are different from each other, but I feel like it's kind of interesting where, you know, you're kind of expressing yourself through this character, which is, you know, it's different from, like, what I do, so it's just interesting to learn about it, so.
Yeah, you express yourself through music, and mm-hmm. I express myself through character.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, do you have anything else that you want to ask Beth?
Oh, I mean, my questions go on and on.
Oh, but, keep going. Keep going. We've got some time.
Oh. Yeah. I've got two... I have one question. Katie, I want you to tell us something that you're obsessed with. Doesn't have to be acting. Doesn't have to be a show. What can you not get enough of?
Oh my god. Oh, why?
I just want to know.
This is such a tough question. I am obsessed with Harry Potter. That is literally, like, I am such a Harry Potter geek. I can talk for, like, days on end about Harry Potter. I can, like, read fan stories about Harry Potter, and, like, I'm a part of a few, like, Harry Potter Facebook groups. Yeah, you know. I'm literally, like, that's the nerdiest thing about me. I'm obsessed. I've been obsessed with it. I've read the books 3 times. I have a copy of the American, like, English ones, and I have the British English ones, because when I was over in England, I went to the studio tour and saw, like, where they made the movies, and then I was like, I want to read the books in their original writing. There's not too much of a difference, really, just, like, a few, like, British words here and there that are different than, like, the American versions, but it was so cool, and then I geeked out, and then I watched all the movies, and, like, literally, when I was in, it was the summer between my senior year of high school, freshman year of college, 2 friends and I watched all 8 Harry Potter movies throughout, like, marathon, basically, like, throughout the entire day. It took us almost 24 hours. It was amazing. I'm obsessed with Harry Potter. I'm also obsessed with mint chocolate chip ice cream and lime LaCroix.
The sparkling water.
I love it. I'm obsessed. I don't drink too much soda. Really?
It's like weird, like, spicy water. I don't like it.
You get used to it after a while, I guess.
You get desensitized.
You get desensitized. And, like, I crave carbonation, but I don't drink soda. So that's, like, and I would, like, try diet soda, but, you know, it's just as bad for you, apparently. So I'm just like, whatever. Like, I'm going to drink
the LaCroix. Gotta get those bubbles. Yeah.
I know, literally. I'm like, please. I can drink a whole pack of them in a day.
Nice.
Great. Oh, what was your other question? Oh, wait.
Well, now my question is, what's your Harry Potter house?
Oh, Gryffindor. All the way.
Nice.
100%.
Yeah. I think Harry Potter's, like, a cool and interesting, because especially since you mentioned, like, back in high school, and I remember, like, the last Harry Potter movie came out when I was, like, what, a junior or senior in high school? And I remember, like, oh, shit, I've been, like, going to see this movie, like, I, like, genuinely, like, grew up reading these books come out, watching the movies come out, and I was like, wow, that's, because, like, I feel like TV shows and stuff, to an extent, it's hard to have one that lasts long enough to really encapsulate, like, where you grow up exactly with the character. Like, it is possible, but, like, for me, that was all, like, Harry Potter was kind of like that to me, which was, and I think that was, like, the first time I realized it was my, you know, one of my classmates being like, the Harry Potter movie comes out, and then just, like, bursting into tears, because, like, that's my whole childhood. What do I do after that?
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know, it's wild to think about those kind of things and then kind of just move on. Well, like, so they defeated Voldemort. Well, what next?
Anyway.
Yeah, I know. I think the first book came out, well, like, 2 months after I was born, so obviously didn't get into that at that early age. Yeah. But I think it was the second movie came out when I was in kindergarten, and I remember, like, telling my parents I really wanted to watch it, and they were, like, a little hesitant because they were like, it's kind of spooky. Like, you probably get a little scared with the big snake and the big spider, and they weren't wrong. I had nightmares about hearing the snake in the walls. But we used to play Harry Potter, like, on the playground. Yeah, I know, right? And so I just remember, like, growing up with that. And then the 8th movie came out when I was, was I 13? I was going into freshman year of, oh, no, I was 14. I was going into my freshman year of high school. So at that point, I was just like, wow, what do I do now? No, I relate.
It's always weird when you finish something like that. Like, my god, I'm almost caught up on Critical Role. Anyway.
I'm currently watching The Handmaid's Tale. Nice. And It is a lot, but I'm almost finished. I'm like binge watching it right now.
How is it watching like things when you're an actor? Like, because I know, like, I obviously like see art and I like analyze it like immediately. Right. Like, that's what I do. Do you do the same? Like, you probably can't watch anything without your mind immediately going into like,
yep,
that zone.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whenever I see a television show or a movie, I immediately like start looking at the acting. I start looking at like the elements of a story and I'm like, oh, this is really good. This is really good character development. This is like their choice for this like part of this performance was incredible. Sometimes I can completely hate a story but love the performances of an actor. And with theatrical productions, I look at like technical elements too. And sometimes I'm even so nitty gritty that like if I'm up close and I can see like the placement of their microphones, I'm like, where is it? What do I do? It's, yeah, definitely. I overanalyze it. And I can't just like turn my brain off and be like, oh, I'm just going to watch this, you know? I always have to think about it.
Does it make it better or worse for you?
That's a great question. Sometimes it's better, sometimes it's worse. Honestly, it's kind of in the middle. Like, for some things, I'm like, wow, I really want to like this, but I can't like it. Like, for example, that Netflix show that came out over the summer, or like over the winter, what was it called? Emily in Paris. Did you guys watch that?
I did not.
Okay, well, everybody loved it, except for me. I was like, I can't watch this because the characters are so cringeworthy. Netflix, if you're listening, I'm sorry. Like, but like, it was so cringeworthy, and I just like could not get past it. Like, the story itself was basically about this girl who is, I think she's like right out of grad school, and she's in the fashion design industry. I think fashion design, and she like goes to Paris from, I think she was in New York or Chicago, and she just like she's trying to learn how to live as like an American in Paris, and it's very stereotypical. She's very obnoxious, and I'm just like, this is so hard to watch. I hate all of this. But on the flip side, me watching The Handmaid's Tale right now, I'm like, this is incredible television. Like, the story itself is a lot to handle, but the performances are amazing. Like, I am attached to these characters. I want to know what they go through. Like, I'm so attached to the point where, like, I can feel what they go through, you know, to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That immersion is incredible.
Oh. It is.
And to be totally honest, I definitely thought that Emily in Paris was just, like, a joke Twitter account. experience, it like, I just, be. Every now and then I just saw, like, it see, like, this, you know, random tweet that's just, like, Emily in Paris, and I was like, someone's friend named Emily just like in Paris, and they're just like,
it's so bad
because that's just how the tweets read too. And I was like, so to hear that it's a TV show is like, that okay. Dude, that kind of makes sense, I guess.
The actress who played Emily, her name was the actress Lily Collins. She got nominated for a Golden Globe for Emily in Paris, and I was like, are you kidding me? She didn't win, obviously, but like, what the fuck? I was like, that performance was not Golden Globe worthy. Like, what? But okay. Yeah. It's a lot. My roommate and I literally drank bottles of champagne, like the mini bottles of champagne, to get through it.
Oh, man.
It was that bad, but we had to get through it. We turned the first episode off originally, and we were like, I'm not watching this. Like, it was that, like, we were, like, 3 minutes in, and I was like, no, I can't do it. And then we decided to go back and watch it while drinking champagne so that we could, like, numb our minds.
Well, now I need to see it. I just need to see what this thing is.
Oh, yeah?
If you let's want pop to some champagne, Patty, let's.
Yeah, do it.
I can watch that shit.
Oh, I love it. Oh.
Oh. Well, I was definitely curious to know what you had some unpopular opinions about. So that's like really interesting that you have such like you're like, that fucking sucks. Next, please. Like, dude, I've been there. If I'm watching, like, I turn off anything the moment I hate it. Like, and I never return. I don't have time. But
Beth, do you have any of those like similar opinions with like in your like art world?
There's something a little I don't know if I should get into it.
Do it. I need to know now.
There's something a little hot in the digital art world right now called NFT, non-fundable token. Basically, it's a JPEG that you pay millions of dollars for. And it's like Bitcoin. That's it. And basically, it like uses carbon emissions and all this stuff to support the thing, and it's bad for the environment and store a bunch of other things. Yuck. I just think it's dumb that you're selling a JPEG for millions of dollars. Like, and it's like not, I don't know. It's not good, and people are like really defensive about it, and people are like, oh, I'm gonna go. Anyway, that's...
Now I need to look this up.
It's very gray and murky. I just like... I'm just a no-go on that, unfortunately. unless I can literally make millions of dollars, and then I'm interested, however. but not for... I don't know. I don't have that many hot takes for the most part. I just think art is pretty. Even weird, shitty art, like, I think Cameron was talking about, like, modern art. Like, I believe that shit. Like, I don't know, if you feel it, you do it, it's art. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
That's me. Next. Okay, anyway. All right. I wanted to know if there's any, like, lessons you learned or something, that you thought you knew about what you were doing, like, or about acting, like, that ended up being wrong or right. Ooh. Even.
Ooh. I definitely underestimated the time it would take to be like super successful. Mm-hmm. I would say that I'm pretty successful. Like, I've moved out to LA, I've been getting acting jobs, I've been getting auditions, I'm putting myself out there and taking classes. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, and it seems to be working. But I definitely feel, in my younger years, I was that person that was like, I'm going to move to LA, and within a year, I'm going to have an agent, and I'm going to book a commercial, and I'm going to like start working toward like getting a theatrical agent, to the point like who they are. Theatrical agents run like film and television stuff and higher up theater. And so it's like, I was like, oh, I'm gonna do this, and I'm gonna do that, and I'm gonna submit for all of these auditions, and I'm gonna get like at least one of them. I think I've gotten like maybe two of the auditions that I've done out of like hundreds. Wow. So it's like, yeah, and like growing up, you know, doing theater, I knew that like that was like I was setting myself up for like a lifetime of no's, and like banking on getting that one yes, you know. So mm-hmm. It's kind of like you can't really get attached to any kind of project or any kind of auditions, because you kind of just have to do it and then move on, and then mm-hmm. if it comes, it comes, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. But on the flip side, I've learned a lot of valuable lessons in that, like really taking time to work on yourself and to make sure that you're like a strong person and you're not going to get hurt by like the dumb shit that people say, because everybody's going to have an opinion on you, whether or not like you're amazing or like you could be. I really like this. I've seen this post like a million times where it's like, you could be the world's tastiest slice of apple pie, and somebody's still gonna want peach cobbler instead, or something like that. I think that's like how it goes. And so I think about that in acting terms. It's like, I could do everything right in this audition and be perfect, but somebody else has like, I don't know, like a slightly different hair color than me, and they're like, we're gonna use her instead, because we won't have to like buy a wig or something like that for them. And like I've had that happen before, where it's like, oh, this person, like, you're great for the role, but you're blonde and we want a brunette. And I'm like, well, okay, never mind. You know. So handling criticism definitely comes in handy. You're not going to be everybody's cup of tea. Yeah, it really is. You got to have really thick skin most of the time. Like, I'm pretty fortunate to have a bunch of friends who are doing the same thing. So we just kind of like if we get hurt, we get hurt, when we move on, you know, like, we all support each other really well. Mm-hmm. But most of us, you know how to just roll with the punches, especially like from people that we don't know, because it's like, maybe I'll never see them again, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, we love valuable life lessons.
Yes. They're important to have. You got to learn them somehow. No,
they are. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really, it's scary to put. Yeah, it's scary to put your like expression and your art out there, mm-hmm. and like, especially like in like an audition situation, because like I've talked about this before. It's like that audition, like that, just, you know, the eye, like when you're basically being like examined, like that. That's hard. Like, it's, for me, it's easier to perform in front of more people. I mean, I have to get through that first note. Like, if I get through the first song, I'm totally set. That defines it. But then, like, it's easier to do that than, like, an audition kind of thing. And that takes, like, a lot to get up and have someone just be like, nope, yep. And it's like, ooh, that... Are auditions still, like, exciting to you? Because I feel like, for me, like, I would do, like, violin competitions and stuff, and those were pretty much always terrifying. But then every now and then I've done, like, an... audition for, you know, odds and ends, this or that thing, and it can be exciting at the same time.
Yeah. Auditions are definitely still like exciting for me. I mean, I still get nervous. Mm-hmm. Not so much with like self tapes, because that seems to be like how auditions are really like happening nowadays. We barely mm-hmm. do in-person auditions. I definitely prefer in-person auditions, because I'm definitely a type of person that needs to feel the energy of the other person in order to, like, really go for it. But, yeah, I do enjoy auditioning still. They can be a pain in the ass, though, but it's how we're going to get work, so I just have to get past the awkward phases of it. But like you said... I totally agree. I would literally rather be performing in front of a group of thousands of people than yeah. two people. Because, like, I don't know about it. Something about that is just so much easier yep. than somebody who's, like, intimately there with you. And you're like, oh, shit, they're, like, looking at everything, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. Reverse stage fright. We're going to coin it.
Yeah.
Heard it here yeah. first.
You did. You did hear it here first. That's how I was. I remember in high school, I was a tour guide at a museum in Savannah. And sometimes we would have people come in that I knew. And I hated giving mm-hmm. tours to people that I knew. I would so much rather give a tour to like a group of 20 strangers. And on the flip side, I also hated giving tour. Well, I used the word hate loosely. I preferred to not have to give tours to two people or one person, because it was mm-hmm. just so awkward. Like, I had to be so, like, one-on-one with them that I was just like, ugh. Whereas if I had a group of, like, 20, 25 people, I could just be like, this is it. And then, like, we're done, you know? I don't know. I don't know what it is. Anything else you would like to know? My favorite color is red.
There we go. That's it. Okay, we're gonna stop it now. That's all we needed. That's what we really were for. Well, I think it might be a good time to ask our
just to close it out.
I think we're. I was gonna do the
same thing, Patty. You take it away.
So we asked this. This has become our closing thing. What feels like home to you?
A lot of things feel like home to me. When I am outside walking like this street right here that's lined with palm trees, and seeing Warner Brothers and Universal Studios and like the mountains in the distance, knowing that I'm going to be on those back lots someday, that feels like home to me. When I'm with my friends and having a great time and laughing, that feels like home to me. When I'm enjoying a really nice cup of coffee or tea, that feels like home to me. When I am driving down the freeway, blasting a bunch of music and just being silly and singing along, like that feels like home to me too. And having really great quality time with people, whether they're people that I know or strangers like you too, We're now friends. That feels like home to me too. And I really love that, and I enjoy being a part of people's lives.
Okay. It's all about that human connection.
I'm very much an empath. I'm very much a person who needs human connection.
Yes.
So y'all were great.
Well, yeah. I feel like a lot of people learned like how much they enjoy human connection. Like there's this whole like narrative of just like, oh, I don't like people. And it's like, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that sucks. But then now that we spent like the last year and a half like confined, we're just like, I miss people. I miss hugs. Mm-hmm. I miss this.
I know. It's still so weird. Like now things are opening back up in LA. And so I'm like, can I hug my friends in public or is that still frowned upon? Like, yes. Or I feel the need to be like wear a sign that says like, I'm fully vaccinated. Can I hug you? Like,
yeah. Here's my card.
Here's my card, guys. I promise you like that or
carry
just
it around
like,
in your wallet.
Literally.
I do.
I have mine like with my passport because I don't want to like lose it, but my passport's in like this laminated case and I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna put that there so it doesn't get ruined.
Oh man, I love that. Just, you know, did you guys remember the free hug sign people? I feel like they were big. Yes. Like back in like 2008 to like 2014 era. Mm-hmm. Bring those back and you just stand out there with like your vaccination card. Yeah.
I'm fully vaccinated, guys. Like, please come hug me. I promise I'm safe as far as I know. I need human connection. So, yeah. Well, thank you guys for having me. It was so much fun.
Yes.
If y'all want to, y'all should add me on the IG.
Link yourself. What are those links, Katie?
Yes. Plug my shit. I'm on Instagrams mostly where I post, and I am trying to be on TikTok.
us like millennials were like, we're gonna do this.
I had one video go viral on TikTok and then I was like, oh, that's it. I was a one hit wonder. Like, it was great. But so my Instagram handle is my name. It's Katie, with 6 A's and 2 E's and an underscore. And Patrick, I can text this to you too. And then, my TikTok, I want to say it's like Katie Morris 4, I think, like nice. CATIEMORRIS and the number 4. I'm trying to rebrand myself and put myself out there on TikTok, but I've been saying that for months now, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally downloaded the app. I have an account.
That's a step.
That's where we're at.
Yeah. That seems to be where all of us millennials are at. There's something precious in its design. Shut, but I still can't see through fine.
You're still on my mind. Wonder if I'm ever going to. Well, we can yak on forever. Katie, yes. Thank you for joining us. This
anytime,
has been lovely.
Y'all. It was amazing.
Come feel to our podcast to... barbecue.
What?
Oh,
you're having a podcast barbecue?
Yeah, we joked about it.
We're joking
like,
about it, but it's
but it's gonna happen. It's definitely gonna happen.
Loki, yeah, we were... tell me when, because flights are really cheap right now between LA and Colorado.
And you're vaccinated, why not?
And I'm vaccinated. I know.